Sister Lee, huh? They were chant their usual puja. Huh? Then after that, we were followed by our Theravada traditional puja. Sister Lee has so kindly distributed the notes. These are the notes that actually we come out with after the third session. So today we are in the fourth session of the Heart Sutta. So this is a third Heart Sutta class notes. It will help you if you read through, because there were conditions for certain questions that were asked. And this condition is so useful because it helps answer a lot of people's doubt and all those things. Then with that cleared, most of you will understand why we have to go through the introduction and why Master Chen Hua include the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta and all those things, and how I introduce you all to the Heart Sutta by bringing up to you the similarity between Sakyamuni Buddha's teaching and Kuan Yin Bodhisattva's final understanding of the essence of the whole truth or teaching. So these are very useful. We will do a recap, then we will go through. Okay. Maybe you all get ready. Then we let Sister Lee conduct the puja. Okay. You can use the mic actually. It will help. Okay. You pay respect three times, then we start.
南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无观世音菩萨，南无观世音菩萨，南无观世音菩萨，般若波罗蜜多心经，观自在菩萨行深般若波罗蜜多时，召见无蕴皆空，度一切苦厄。舍利子，舍不异空，空不异色，色即是空，空即是色，受想行识皆不如是。舍利子，是诸法空相，不生不灭，不垢不净，不增不减，是故空中无色，无受想行识，无眼耳鼻舌身意，无色声香味诸法，无眼界，乃至无依自界，无无明意，无无明净，乃至无老死亦无老死尽，无苦集灭道，无智亦无得亦无所得故，菩提萨多依般苦婆罗蜜多故，心无挂碍，无挂碍故，无有恐怖缘，离颠倒梦想究竟涅槃，三世诸佛依般苦婆罗蜜多故，得阿耨多罗三藐三菩提。故知般苦婆罗蜜多是大神咒，是大明咒，是无上咒，是无等等咒，能除一切苦，真实不虚故说般苦婆罗蜜多咒，即作咒曰：揭谛揭谛婆罗揭谛婆罗僧揭谛菩提萨婆诃。
Okay, we will start the Theravada puja. We will chant the salutation to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Duttiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Duttiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majjhapamadatthana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to all the worthy ones. Just relax yourself, huh? Then we can start. Huh? Okay, very good afternoon to all, huh? Brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Huh? Today I brought my spec, huh? So you don't worry, I can read now. The last session I forgot. Huh? Okay, with the reading glasses a lot clearer. Huh? Okay, so today is the fourth session of this Han Sutta and meditation class at Wu Ping Jing Sa. Today is, I think, the fourth, is it? 4th of March 2012. Okay, the time is 3 plus. We start. Okay, turn to the notes that were distributed. We will do a quick recap. Short notes taken to assist in developing a clearer and better understanding of the Heart Sutta as discussed. So there was a sister who helped create a condition for Dhamma to flow. I think she is the sister in front, in red. I forgot your name. What's your name? Catherine. Yeah, thank you so much, Catherine. You asked two very good and very important questions. The first question that she asked was very good and very unique. She said, why must we go through the introductions by Master Xuan Hua instead of going into the Heart Sutta teaching direct? This is very normal and very usual because whenever we do certain sutta, we normally will go into the sutta direct. But as I explained, this is a very different sutta because it is very profound, very difficult for most people, even cultivators, to understand. That's why I have to introduce you to the topic. Then I have to lead you through slowly to prepare you so that you have a very good base. And then it becomes more useful and more meaningful when we go into it direct because it is really not easy. If I were to just teach you just knowledge, then not much use. What I want to share is the understanding of the Heart Sutta. The understanding will lead to the wisdom, and that is the one that is useful to you, that can free you, that can bring about a lot of understanding to allow you to understand life, thereby living the noble life. So that you all can also become a blessing to the world, to all of humanity and mankind. Okay, I rejoice. The answer, I said, A very good question. It will be like building a high-rise building direct without the building, sorry, without building a stable foundation. As I have explained, the Heart Sutta is a very profound teaching, and it must be understood that without a proper foundation being taught to you all, it is almost near to impossible to understand this teaching unless some of you have had some very strong past cultivation to help support you all in understanding this sutta, in the understanding of this sutta. Hence the reason why I started off by introducing to you all the final summary of the first noble truth of dukkha, followed by an in-depth explanation of the meaning of the two aspects of the five aggregates of form and mind in the first Heart Sutta class. This is to help establish a basis for you all to understand the great similarity between Sakyamuni Buddha's teaching and that of the Heart Sutta as expounded by Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. Both teachers emphasize on the importance of understanding the five aggregates of form and mind, and why are they all empty. Kuan Yin Bodhisattva used the what they call important words to define the five aggregates of form and mind. She used emptiness, and this is seldom used by the Theravada, but the Mahayana used a lot of this term. That's why I put that is anatta and sunyata. In Theravada, you often hear this word anatta. The meaning is the same. It is also about emptiness, except most of the time it's wrongly explained and interpreted. Most Theravada practitioners, cultivators, and also teachers, they tend to define anatta as non-self. Not me. Some they go further a bit, not a permanent unchanging entity, which is a lot better. But the true meaning of anatta is a lot deeper. The Buddha actually explained it very clearly when he asked the monk to chant, starting with the form. The Buddha always chant during the early days, the Theravada tradition. I used to hear this a lot in Thailand when I visited some of these temples and my early teachers. I went to this Swamok, Swamok Surathani, Ajahn Buddhadasa. They chant a lot this one. Then I went to my teacher there, Kanchanapuri, Sunyataram. Sunyataram is the monastery of Ajahn Yantra. There also the monk, they wake up at 3:30, then they start the chanting at 3:45 a.m. every day. So when I was there, I also wake up very early. Then we join in the chanting. They always remind themselves, Rupang Anicchang means form is impermanent. Then they continue, Rupang Anatta. You will be very surprised why form is also anatta. So if you say form is anatta, form cannot be non-self. Well, it's not a living thing. So that's why the meaning is more than non-self. It's condition arising, cause of phenomenon. That's why it's not a permanent unchanging entity where you can grasp onto and hold onto and say, this is mine. This can be owned and possessed. It cannot be. Then the other thing is, because it's condition arising, cause of phenomena, there is no reality, understand? That's why it's empty of any substance. It comes and it goes. It arises and it disappears, following condition. When you understand this profound teaching, starting from this base, it will help you a lot. Because later on when you cultivate the real meditation as taught by the Buddha, especially the four foundations of mindfulness, the daily mindfulness, then you bring it to fruition. Then you use it to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. All the teaching become clear. Then the Heart Sutta and the Buddha's teaching perfectly mesh. So that's how anatta need to be understood. Sunyata is a Pali word for emptiness. Okay, I will go on. The introduction by Master Xuan Hua also explained how wonderful and full of wisdom this sutra is, and also why it is so important to read through this sutra diligently many times with inestimable benefit, because each repetition will reveal to the reader a new depth or a new level of understanding. So sometimes you don't just assume that this great master, they repeat and repeat and repeat. Why do they repeat? You always ask. Boring, repeat and repeat. Because they know it hasn't gone in yet. That's why they need you to understand it. Every time they repeat, it goes in at another level. Because there are some who were not ready the first time they hear about it. It doesn't give them much understanding. It doesn't impact much on them. But when they are ready, the second time they hear it, it is totally different. That's why I say when you read this note, you go back into the recorded tape that Suyan has given to you all through the link. You listen again. It's totally different. Then you go and cultivate. After a few months, you come back and listen again. It's again different. All the words last time you never appreciate and you never understand starts to become meaningful. Then it starts to open up your heart. It starts to open up your understanding. Then you will awaken. So this is the reason why Master Xuan Hua, he also knew about the wonderful nature of this sutta. That's why he explained how wonderful and full of wisdom this heart sutta is. So he reminded this one. We took it out from the introduction in his text. So what I have repeated here is what I read to you the last session. So Master Xuan Hua also said, in a book 10 times its length, one could not fully praise its value as a key to the understanding of human life. See? Even you go and look for other sutta that are 10 times the length of Heart Sutta, it doesn't bring out the understanding of what human life is, humanity's life is. So this is a very beautiful teaching. When you understand, you awaken, life becomes so meaningful. That's why, hence the famous saying, true emptiness is wonderful existence. That is, understanding true emptiness can lead to deep understanding of human life. Hence, life and existence will become very meaningful and very wonderful once this Heart Sutta wisdom is developed. So all of your suffering, all of your fear, worry, anxiety and problem, your life situation will all cease to be once you develop this understanding. You become a noble one, enlightened one. So this is the beauty of this teaching. Then Master Xuan Hua also stressed on the importance of why the real spiritual understanding, rather than deep learning or knowledge only, as a true prerequisite for expounding this Heart Sutta. Well, this Heart Sutta is not just for knowledge, understand or not? If it's just theory, knowledge, it doesn't benefit you. That's why Master Xuan Hua, he knew. He has a lot of wisdom too. He said, without the real spiritual understanding, you cannot actually expound this Heart Sutta. The concern of the Heart Sutta and the sutra or the sutta that the Buddha spoke is simply the life and death of living being. In Mandarin, the meaning stand out. Liao sheng si. You heard of this before, not? Solve the mystery of life and death, birth and death. Liao sheng si. That's why all the sutta is just to let you understand simply the life and death of living being. Answering questions like, why must we avoid all evil, do good and purify the mind, following the advice of the Buddha? Because you claim to be the disciple. You claim yourself to be a Buddhist. To be worthy of him, you must at least heed his advice. Understand why he advised you this way and why you must cultivate this way. Hence the question, why must we avoid all evil? Why must we do good and purify our mind? Why must we follow the advice of the Buddha? Then followed by, why are we born? And where will we go when we die? What we must do while we are here? How we can stop our suffering and find true happiness for ourselves and others? Is there such a thing as death? What die and who die? Then who are you and what are you? What is life and what is the purpose of life? All this will be answered once you realize the deep, profound Prajnaparamita Heart Sutta. So this will end the answer for the first question. You got any question or not? So far, is it clear? If it's clear, then good. We go on to question two. This second question is also very good. Because our sister Catherine, I think, she wants to understand, why must we also study the Six Patriarchs Platform Sutta? Although it's a very famous sutta. So the answer is, as the Heart Sutta teaching is so profound, beyond thought and beyond mind, and beyond the conditioned world, hence we need to understand the Six Patriarchs Platform Sutta, especially so understanding the two famous poems as written by Sun Xiu and Hui Ning. Only then can we go beyond mind to understand the Heart Sutta, which is so abstract, like form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. Therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, etc. No ear, no eye, no sight, no sound, no feel of eye, up to and including no feel of mind consciousness. Then finally, no ignorance, no ending of ignorance, up to and including no old age, sickness and death, or the ending of it. And also, no four noble truth, and no understanding and no attaining, etc. So these are so abstract. At one level, the Buddha spoke about this teaching. At another level, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva realized there is no such thing. That's why the conditioned and the unconditioned wisdom are totally different. That's why it is called true emptiness. So I go on to explain. Based on his poem then, Sun Xiu has yet to realize the true mind, hence his inability to comprehend the higher Dhamma as realized by Hui Ning. Hui Ning is the sixth patriarch. The reason being, Sun Xiu is using the mundane mind to cultivate, hence the delusion. Reason why in my second Heart Sutta class and this third Heart Sutta class recap, I deal in more detail this Hui Ning's Platform Sutta. And I also taught you all how to see form, the unreality of form, its condition arising or impermanent nature, and its non-self and empty nature, thereby enabling you all to develop the wisdom to finally see beyond form. This is then followed by the same understanding that all the other four aggregates of mind, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana, means your feeling, your perception, your activity of mind and consciousness, are also impermanent, suffering state, and empty. Only then can you all start to develop the understanding of why form is emptiness and emptiness is form. I already explained in the second recap notes how to understand all this, how to see form, understand the unreality of form, condition arising. You look at the notes earlier, then you will understand. They are all described very clearly. Then how form and mind delusion can still condition you into negativity because of delusion. Form delusion is very powerful. Not until you develop the wisdom you cannot break. That's why ability to see beyond form is the wisdom born of understanding the Buddha Dharma or the Heart Sutta. Once you have that wisdom, You understand form is unreal. Form is condition arising. Form is empty. Then form got no more power over you. That's why form delusion ceases to be, it collapses. Then you can see your mind very clearly. If you can't see form, you can't see mind. Only when you can see form and understand its empty nature, unreality of form, then you penetrate and see beyond form. Then you realize, actually it's all mind. Without mind, all this form got no name, no label, nothing. All our external manifestation or form or appearances arise in your mind through what? Through mind, perception that brings it in. So finally, it's mind, understand? But then mind is still like form, got delusion, because you don't understand. You think they are real. They can be very real, like the Buddha's analogy. So when you understand they are also impermanent, when you grasp and cling, it leads to suffering. Then it is also empty, non-self, condition arising. Then you start to awaken. Then form and mind delusion cease to be. That time you see beyond form and you see beyond the mundane mind. Then you see the true nature. That's how Senshu couldn't penetrate. Senshu stopped at the mind. He trained the mind until it's at the gateway of enlightenment. But he doesn't understand this is not the true mind. The true mind has to go beyond this mundane mind. So when you can break this mundane mind, when you can see the empty nature of mundane mind, the thinking mind, its condition arising, then you realize there is another nature behind that is responsible for all the arising of this form and mind. Then suddenly you awaken, like Hui Ning. Hui Ning realized, since you still haven't break, haven't penetrate, that's why he said, the body is not a, Bohi is not a tree. Bohi is not a tree. Then the mind, not the mundane mind, is it? The true mind is neither the mirror bright nor the stand. Both also, he said, you haven't realized the true mind. That's why he tear down Senshu's poem. Then he said, originally there was nothing, because he doesn't use the mundane mind to meditate, to create right and wrong, good and bad meditation. He don't have to polish until it shines so that no dust can arise. In the first place, he never created anything. So he said, originally there was nothing. Where can the dust arise? Nothing can come in. Because the true mind does not reflect anything. See things as they are, without label, without words, without concept. So that is the big difference. Okay, now we go on to the last part. I also explain about the meaning of life. Then I explain to you, mundane life alone without spiritual life is incomplete. That's why the title, mundane life with or without the spiritual understanding, is very important. It makes a very big difference to your life. We can be very successful in life, both financially and career-wise, but both are mundane aspects of life. But without the spiritual understanding, we are still vulnerable. And many things can still afflict us, especially so the First Noble Truth's 8 conditions, which are also the reality of life and existence. Reason why the Buddha to be renounced the world once he saw the 4 signs of an old man, a very sick man, a dead man, and a samana, or a renowned holy person in robe. Talking about the samana, this is a very good book. We just printed. You heard of Ajahn Mahabhava, Longta Mahabhava. He just passed away, I think, not too long ago, about a year ago or so. Then they actually gave him a very good burial. Then they have so much respect and honor for him. They actually come out with this book. And we all, Kayanamitta fans and many of our Kayanamitta, we actually donated towards this book. And this book just came out not long ago. The title is the same, Samana, means about Long Ta Mahabhava as a samana. You know what is a samana, huh? You see, during the Buddha's time, if you are a holy person, you may not necessarily be a samana. A samana is an enlightened holy person, understand? Means a noble one, but in the robe, understand? That's why it's a samana. Like I explained there, you read. A renounced holy person in robe, you renounce, but you are very holy. You really seriously cultivate the Dhamma, then you become enlightened. That's why you are a samana. You are not just a monk or a bhikkhu, you are a samana. A samana is an enlightened bhikkhu, you can say that. So, if you want, I got 3 copies I bring along. You all can come and collect it from me. This one you can take. I got 2 more copies in the car. Then if you want some more, you let me know. I still have. Okay, with that we continue. The then Buddha to be realized that he had a problem with regards to old age, sickness and death. Hence, he seek the spiritual understanding to gain the wisdom to free himself from this problem. The Mahayana got a very good way of explaining all these problems. Problems of life. The reality of life and existence. Like the Buddha, when he saw the 4 signs, he realized he has a problem with regards to old age, sickness and death. Because he asked the attendant, you mean one day this body of mine will be so fragile and so old, so haggard, like this old man? Those who heard the talk of Ajahn Chah during his memorial, I think they just circulate one recorded talk by Sri Venerable Sri Panyo. He is the son of Ananda Krishnan, Tan Sri Ananda Krishnan. He spoke very well. He talked about Ajahn Chah, how the last 10 years bedridden, so old. At first he cannot understand. He said, how can an enlightened Arahant be like that? Then later he heard from this senior monk that he realized it is Ajahn Chah's way of explaining to them the teaching, the reality of this first noble truth, old age, sickness and death. Because every morning Ajahn Chah want the monk to chant this 5 daily contemplation or reflection. And the first 3 is on this body is of the nature to grow old, for he has not gone beyond old age. This body of ours is of the nature to be diseased and sick, for he has not gone beyond disease and sick. Then this body of ours is of the nature to die, for he has not gone beyond that. All this is in your second Heart Sutta note. You go and read through. They are very useful. And Ajahn Chah wants to let them see and understand. That's why he stayed in that condition. Like in a stroke. But he didn't die. They took care of him so well. But you see, when you see the form, you cannot understand. You don't see beyond form. You cannot understand why it is like that. That's why there was one incident he actually shared with the audience. He said, when he first ordained, they had this tradition at Wat Pananachat. That is the branch monastery for the Western disciple. Then Wat Papong is nearby. So every week they will make sure there is one day they all go. All the monks in Wat Pananachat will go and pay respect to Ajahn Chah. Then when he saw Ajahn Chah's condition, he has a lot of grief, a lot of sorrow, unhappiness. Why? How come this such a famous master have to go through such condition? He cannot understand. Then when they were about to leave, he whispered to 2 senior monks. He said, how come our teacher is like that? At this age, have to go through such suffering. You know what was the answer he got? That senior monk asked, what makes you think he suffer? That one we wake him up. Then he come to realize all the other senior monk understood the message. He wants you to reflect and contemplate seeing as an arahant. The form is still the form, understand that? It will go the way of nature. It doesn't mean that you are enlightened being. You will be all perfect and fully blessed. Yes, virtue blessings are there, but there are certain virtuous enlightened beings. They want to share their teaching. And that is how Ajahn Chah share his teaching. There were conditions for all this, because that is what he wants. That's why the nature's law is very powerful. And their wish will be fulfilled. Understand that? It's nothing to do with karma, actually. It's what they want. And he show it to you. The form is the form. The mind did not suffer. Understand that? Then all those who serve him, pay respect to him, make aspiration. You can ask the disciple. There are so many wonderful story. The wish come true, the aspiration come true, and so many things happen. Even 10 years, he was like in a state of coma, you see. Yet, so much blessings, so much meaning to his condition, so many monks benefited. So when you understand, when you perceive with wisdom and understanding, everything become your teacher, understand not? Everything is Dhamma. So never perceive anything, any life situation negatively. So this is a very good example. And it's very good sharing. It so happened you all have this condition. Because yesterday only I turned on the email. There is one Brother Wong Tam Kyong, he just sent it out. I think it was recorded by Babs, I think. It was during the Ajahn Chah's remembrance, last year, I think, end of last year. I was there at the opening ceremony too. But this talk was later, after I left, I think, the second day or third day. It was a very good talk. You all should listen to it. It will help you understand very profound and very deep meaning. And Ajahn Sri Panyo, or Venerable Sri Panyo, he is very good. Very, very good monk. He understand. Okay, we go on. The then Buddha to be realized, the then Buddha to be realized that he had a problem with regards to old age, sickness and death. Hence he seeks the spiritual understanding to gain wisdom to free himself from all this reality of life and existence, the first noble truth. He then developed a spiritual understanding and became a Sammasambuddha, or a fully enlightened one, underneath the Bodhi tree. So without the true spiritual understanding or wisdom, one cannot be free from all suffering, because one can still have fear, worry, anxiety, etc. via one's own self-delusion, which will condition one to cling onto and grasp onto one's five aggregate of form and mind. Hence, realizing the importance of cultivating the spiritual understanding via meditation as taught by the Buddha, to enable one to live the noble life of love, peace, joy and harmony. Only then there is no more fear, no more worry, no more anxiety and unhappiness and suffering, etc. The spiritual understanding will enable one to clearly understand who you are, what you are, and how you function as a human being, leading to non-delusion and wisdom, to become enlightened in the here and the now. So this is very important. Then in the recap, Brother Teo re-emphasize on the following. This is to remind you. These are very important. The importance of understanding Dhammapada verse 1, 2, 183, 21, 22, and 23, and the final advice of the Buddha before his parinibbana. Once one comprehends this verse, one will understand the importance of training the mind to be heedful or ever mindful. One will wake up and see the danger of heedlessness And one will be very serious about life to develop the cultivation. This Dhammapada verse I classify as words of wisdom of the Buddha. And it's in my note. I have given you all understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Anybody who don't have the notes, you can put up your hand. I will bring them the next day or the next session. So far, everybody got that book, is there? Anybody don't have? Or you don't have?
I see whether I still have one.
Okay, the book is like this. If you don't have, you let Sister Lee know. Then I will bring. I still have quite a lot of copies. These are printed by the Kayanamita using Kayanamita Fund. It's for free distribution. This one is very useful. It's a summary of all the emails, the important emails that I wrote to the various Buddhist organizations and temple all over the world, actually. So these are actually a compilation of email written by me to various Buddhist group and Dhamma friends all over the world. And they actually spell out to you even the meditation, what is meditation, how to understand the Buddha Dharma, then the words of wisdom, the important Dhammapada words. Everything is more or less summarized here. So with this, you can easily understand the Buddha's teaching. Okay, then we go on. The second important emphasis is the danger of letting these three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, which are the roots of all evil, from manifesting in your mind or in your heart. When your heart stirs, the evil roots will be there. If your heart got no delusion, the evil roots will not be there. So the best actually check, listen to this, in your cultivation, the best check is whenever you are not peaceful and not happy, the evil roots are there. When you don't have a happy mind, a peaceful mind, a calm mind, the evil roots are there. So that is what you need to do. And they are the roots of all evil. You have to root it out. So the third recap is the importance of arising the four right effort to root out the three evil roots and the five hindrance of mind. The first two right effort deal with it, then the next two right effort will arise the wholesomeness, refine upon whatever goodness and wholesomeness that you have. Then the three evil roots can be rooted out. And the five hindrance also can be rooted out. Then the last emphasis is on the importance of cultivating the five spiritual faculty to overcome the five mental hindrance of mind. They are all on the whiteboard. It's also mentioned in the notes, the earlier notes, last session. Okay, then the last part is there are some pointer that Sister Lee wrote down, so I classify them as notes. Understanding Kayanupassana, this is the first foundation of the four foundation of mindfulness, or the Satipatthana Sutta. So under the Kayanupassana, there is a category of cultivation called Sati Sampajana, means mindfulness and the four types of clear comprehension of every action and every movement in the present moment. This is the most important cultivation needed to stabilize one's mindfulness or sati via the daily mindfulness cultivation. Hence, reason why Bradtew always said life itself is the real meditation and life is our true teacher. That's why when you understand the Dhamma, you understand that everything in life is Dhamma. And everything in life can teach you the true Dhamma.
because they are the reality of life and existence. Then the second notice, the four types of clear comprehension are clear comprehension of sincerity of purpose, means your intention to cultivate this four foundation of mindfulness as taught by the Buddha is just to develop the wisdom for enlightenment and nothing to do with psychic and all those other what they call sidetrack ideas. Then there is this clear comprehension of domain of meditation. I already explained. You can meditate anywhere, any place, anytime. No need to tell yourself, I can only meditate when I come to a retreat, or I come to a temple, or I'm in a meditation place. No such thing. The Buddha said, all posture, anywhere, any place, anytime. So domain of meditation will free your mind from wrong view. When you have wrong view, you always give reason to justify your inaction, your heedlessness. I got no time to meditate. I cannot meditate because the place is not conducive. The environment is not conducive. I don't have teacher. All this is how you justify because you don't understand the domain of meditation. You don't need anything. You only need to be sincere, determined. Then through that sincerity, it will bring forth the way. Patience is also very important. If you are very sincere and you have the patience, it will unfold the way for you. Okay, the next one is clear comprehension of suitability. Means wherever you are, the most important place is the place you are in. The most important people are the people that you are with. The most important time is now. So suitability is you must not be deluded by what you are exposed to. A lot of people, when they are here, they go and worry about people elsewhere. Understand? You cannot do much, understand? Because you are here. They are there. That's why you arise your thought to worry about them for what? You must do something more tangible, more meaningful. Then you are not deluded. Then no need to arise a fear, worry and anxiety. Do what you have to do while you are here. And the most important people are the people here. These are the people whom you can help, share and develop the understanding. Understand? And the most important time is not to be heedless. The moment in awareness. When you are with the moment in awareness, you are heedful. Then you can see things clearly. You can understand the truth and the reality. You can see things as they are. Then if you know how to develop the meditation, cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, you become heedful. That is what Appamatta is. Then the last one is clear comprehension of non-delusion. Means you are no longer deluded by the Sakkaya Ditti, the self, the phenomena, physical, mental and nature's phenomena, because you understand their characteristic very clearly. The impermanent nature characteristic, the suffering characteristics, and the anatta or non-self and empty nature characteristics. So this non-delusion will free your mind. Then you can actually cultivate very well. Okay, the third note is the domain of meditation means one can meditate in any posture, anywhere, any place, at any time, under any circumstances. This is to just make it clear. Then anything, external form, or external appearances that is created by mind via perception is only what? A mental image, isn't it? How do you come to know all this external form? Everything that you come to know, how does it arise? Through your memory, you perceive them, isn't it? And what is that? It's just a mental image. So if it's a mental image, means it comes and it goes, hence impermanent, not so real and empty. To cling onto it is obviously a delusion. So form is never a problem. External appearances are never a problem if we know how to use the mind without any attachment or delusion. That's why when you understand how mind creates, then form has got no more power over you. Yeah. Because do you know what form is or not? It's actually the external manifestation of your mind. Without this mind, form does not arise. Then how you move and how you become a human being, how you animate yourself, actually is external manifestation of what your consciousness wants you to do. Understand or not? When you are emotional and all those things, you can see it in your face, isn't it? When you try to deceive people, it shows. That's why it's external manifestation of mind. So when you can see beyond form, you see the mind. Then when you can see beyond mind, you realize that nature, you enlighten and you awaken. Then everything becomes clear. Yeah? Okay, the last one is, Buddha's three turning of the Four Noble Truths, leading to the three types of corresponding wisdom called Suttamaya Panya, Chintamaya Panya, and Bhavanamaya Panya. So the first turning corresponds to Suttamaya Panya, the first type of wisdom. Then the second turning corresponds to Chintamaya Panya. Then the last one is about Bhavanamaya Panya. This I have already explained. It's also in the notes. The notes here are very important. It talks about the three turning of the Four Noble Truths, and this is what the Buddha himself also did. Without this understanding, he cannot claim to be the enlightened one. Then there is under the appendix, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, it explained the three turning. It mentioned clearly the three turning, but it didn't explain, sorry. The explanation was by me through the email. There was a condition. Somebody from the United States, she wants to know one of the Dhamma sites. They were having Dhamma discussion. Then they asked this question. Then I explained. That's how the condition came about. I think that was 5-6 years ago. 2006, if I'm not wrong. So if you get hold of this book, go back and read it. I realize a lot of people keep this book. Never, seldom flick through. Because it is too dry, I think. Most people don't understand what is it. So a lot of email. But if you really, really want to understand the Buddha Dharma, this is the first book you have to really read. And when you understand this, it gives you a very strong foundation and base to understand the true teaching. Then you start to appreciate, how come this book has been with you for so long, you never really realize the gem within, the importance of it. So go back and read through and develop your own understanding. Okay, I just finished this off. For details to refer to Brother Teo's Dhamma Note on Understanding the Meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is this book, this very book. Okay, I finished the recap. Do you have any question? If you got any question, you can ask. Anybody want to ask any question? Today very good. Less than 50 minutes. Okay, we have a lot of time. Anybody got any question? If you don't have, then we continue from where we stop. Is the introduction one, Roman number 10. We stop at page 10. We're supposed to read about this, what they call Master Xuan Hua's life history. Okay. The Venerable Master Xuan Hua's birth itself was an extraordinary beginning. In a dream, his mother saw Amitabha Buddha emitting a bright light that pervades the entire world. And she awoke to give birth to the Master while a rare fragrance lingers in the room. Huh? You know why the fragrance are there? Huh? Very, very nice fragrance. Do you know what is associated with or not? The higher beings, the cultivator, the devas. Normally, you can smell them when they are around. They have this fragrance. He was only 11 when he resolved to devote his life to cultivate the Buddha's way. While out playing with friends, he saw the dead body of a baby girl, and not knowing what it was, he ran home to ask. A friend of the household informed him that death is inevitable for everyone, unless they are able to end the revolving wheel of birth and death by following the footsteps of the Buddha. He immediately resolved to leave the home life to become a bhikkhu, a Buddhist monk. But he honored his mother's request that he stay at home until his parents' death to care for them in their old age. So in the following year, on Avalokiteshvara, which is Kuan Yin Bodhisattva's birthday, the master dreamed that an old lady wearing a patchwork robe and a string of beads appeared to guide him through a wilderness in which he was lost. You will be very surprised, huh? Kuan Yin Bodhisattva came in white, but you describe wearing a patchwork robe and a string of beads. Most of you would thought, when you dream of Kuan Yin Bodhisattva or Amitabha Buddha, they will come very beautiful, No. When it came to me, also same, 1986. Just a lady in white, very old lady. At first, I didn't know who she is. But the moment she opened up my palm, very funny, she started to pour something on it. Then I saw the vase with the... Then I realized who she is. Oh, straight away, my heart rejoiced and pay respect. You know what she poured on my palm? The triple gem. Three of this gem. 1, 2, 3 in a straight line. And just give me one message. Not much time left. You have to move fast. I just woke up immediately after that. Then I knew it was a very strong message. That was the year my cultivation transformed. 86 to 92, everything happened. The teacher come, the guy come, the book come, everything that need to come. That's why he said, not much time left. You need to move fast. And I don't know what that thing was. But the moment I woke up, I knew. Then I paid respect. There was so much joy, so much of this respect and gratitude towards Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. That's why I have a lot of affinity with her. Not only that, when I was young, I almost drowned. I think at a very young age. Later on, I came to know, 30 over years later, something happened when I was paying respect to Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. Because that time I understood it, 1989. I have a lot of gratitude. And very funny, the moment I pay respect, then I come out, and there was so much joy contemplating how wonderful Kuan Yin Bodhisattva has been, giving me all the support, the guidance and condition and everything. Just like when the Buddha, after his enlightenment, looked at the Bodhi tree, exactly the same. Suddenly one image came when I was swimming in the river that time. That time I don't understand, but I know something helped me. Actually, I was supposed to drown already. I borrowed a basketball. I was so young that time, 7 or 8 years old. I was swimming in the river. And you know what happened? Suddenly that basketball drifted away because I was careless. I didn't hold it properly. Then that time I don't really know how to swim yet. I can only float. So I had to make the decision. But at that time very poor. Huh? If I lose the ball, I got to pay, and it, to me it's a lot of money. So I make the decision. I have to just go forward and make sure I get the basketball. Otherwise, I will drown or I will have to swim back. So I make the decision to dash out and get the basketball. And you know what happened? The moment I dash out, I push the water, and the water pushed the basketball further away. Ah, oh, I said, die already. If I go some more, if I cannot get, I will drown. Because I know how to swim maybe 3 or 4 strokes only. After that, I cannot float already. I will drown. And you know what happened? The moment I was there hesitating, making that decision, suddenly the basketball miraculously just flowed back to me. And I grabbed onto it and so grateful I returned the basketball straight away that I didn't swim anymore after that day. And that was 1961, I think. 61 or 62. I think I was about 7 or 8 years old. You see, let's say 62, 1989 is how many years later? 89. 20-something years, 20 over years later. I saw that vision, the basketball flowing back to me. You ask yourself, I totally forgot about the incident. And straight away, there was so much joy, and I kneeled down and thanked Kuan Yin Bodhisattva for what happened. Because who else can know about that? And that vision just come. That's why I knew I got a lot of affinity with Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. And when I went to Potosan, same thing happened in China. Very strong. I took a group of Dhamma friends. That time, I think Suyan and Mi Fong didn't go. They went the next one, Utai San. The Potosan was... That one, we went to 4 mountains, I think. We went to Potosan, Chiu Hua San, Huang San, and there's one more place I forgot. Those trips were all so beautiful. All the spiritual and calm Dhamma trip, they were so beautiful. It meant to be. The energy was so strong when I was there, and so many things happened. The weather, everything. That's why Achan Achan Lok, he also went there. He also has great affinity with Kuan Yin. That's why when the two of us met in Thailand last year, we talked so many things in common. When you cultivate, you will come to know them. And I can tell you, it's like Xian Hua said, old lady in white patch. Not that you sure you see the very beautiful one. No. Most of those who do psychic one, they see very beautiful one. then that one you have to be careful. But you have to have the wisdom to understand what these visions are. Not all of them are the truth and the reality. A lot are created through non-human to delude you, to actually condition you into believing it. But there are certain things that you know through wisdom cannot be, nobody know about this. And I was just paying respect with gratitude. Then suddenly, when I was just admiring what great Kuan Yin Bodhisattva was creating the condition to help me all this while, then suddenly the vision appeared. 20 over to 30 years later, I totally forgot about it. You see, you got such thing. That's why I said, my biography, if you know, you will have a shock of your life. Is really very different from normal people. Totally different. Okay, we don't sidetrack. We continue. A friend of the household informed him that death is inevitable. Okay, this one we finish. Okay, he wants to become a monk. In the following eye, okay, this dream. Master dreamt that an old lady wearing a patchwork robe and a string of beads appeared to guide him through a wilderness in which he was lost. She radiated compassion as she led him out over the road, which was guarded with deep and dangerous holes. He knew that if he had tried to traverse this road alone, it would have been difficult, if not impossible, to reach safety. But as she guided him, the road became smooth and safe, and he could see clearly in all directions. Ahead was his home. Glancing back on the dangerous road, he saw many people following him, old and young, men and women, Sangha and scholar. "Who are these people?" he asked. "Where did they come from, and where are they going?" Then Kuan Yin Bodhisattva replied to him. You know what he said? What she said? "They have affinity with you," she said, "and they also want to go home. You must guide them well and show them the way so that all may arrive safely at Nirvana. I have important work to do elsewhere, and so I shall leave you now, but we shall soon meet again." Even Master Xuan Hua, I have a lot of affinity. You remember after that dream, 1986, I met Master Xuan Hua. He was the first Dhamma teacher that I met. Then my whole family took refuge that year under him. When I was in the university, he came twice. Very funny. Both occasions also, they notified me, and I came to meet up with him. I listened to him too. When I was in the university, I remember the first one was we are in the second year, in one of the either law faculty or econs faculty. They were having a gathering there. Then later on, I met him again when he was in Brickfield. He came. Then later on, in 1986, after I got that message, one day I just bumped into somebody very funny. This guy was actually a lay person. The story is too long to tell. This lay person was very much younger than me. That time I was 30 plus, I think. The funny thing is, he gave me one book. He saw I got a string on my hand. He gave me a book. He said, "You are a Buddhist?" I said, "Yes." Gave me a book. You know what that book was? The first book on the Surangama Sutta, Leng Yan Jing, translated in English by Master Xuan Hua. I got a shock. Then I asked this guy, I said, "How come you got this type of book?" I said, "I heard about it, but I got no chance to get it because I wanted to read his book, actually. But there was no condition." Then that time, it just come. And the moment I opened that book, like I can understand the teaching very easily, like I read it before already. Then I asked him for the contact. And you know what he told me? He said, he was actually a kapya to Master Xuan Hua for many years, when he was very young. But his father got a business, and he is the only son. So that's why he was forced to come back and take over the father's business. That's how the condition arise. I met him. Then after that, it so happened my brother, I got another brother in Penang. I think Mi Fong knows him, the electrical engineer, Ronnie. He was posted there, California. Then I said, "That's good. Go there and buy whatever book is available, the English translation." So he bought me all the books, the Lotus Sutta, everything, whatever that was translated. I remember I paid $1,000 over to get the books. But that was the beginning. That's why at that time, 86, 87, everything happened. Then later I met many of my teachers and masters. That's how it happened. And it's very, very unique. The conditions are very unique. So, to cut everything short, if you have your cultivation, if you have your past, you will inherit everything. Everything will come back to you. So the law of karma is very powerful. That's why the Buddha said, avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind, and make the right and appropriate aspiration, so that every life you come, you are ready, you will connect, and you will have the good life, the beautiful life, the noble life. So this is the message. Nature's law is very beautiful when you understand, very fair. That's why do not be heedless. Make haste in developing the cultivation. Train your mind well. Develop the practice and the cultivation well. Do not be heedless. Then determine strongly to walk this way, the path of Dhamma, so that you can free not only this life, subsequent life, if you choose to come back, the entire existence. Then you will understand the meaning of true emptiness is wonderful existence. 真空妙有. Then life becomes so meaningful and so wonderful. Every time you come, you are so blessed. Like you are so lucky. Actually, nothing to do with luck. Your blessing comes from your own cultivation and your own inheritance, nothing else. Okay, we go on. Okay, after that, the master asked her name and where she lived. Kuan Yin Bodhisattva replied, "You will find out when you arrive home," she said. "There is no need to ask so many questions." Suddenly, she wheeled around and disappeared. The master led the people safely home and woke up from his dream, feeling extremely happy. This type of message, every time it comes, is before you wake up. That time. Always like that. The moment the message is finished, you will wake up. You will be like awake, just come out. Like you never sleep. And the message is very clear. It's not a dream. It's like a dream, but it's not a dream. During that year, he began bowing to his parents 3 times each, in the morning and in the evening. 12 bows a day. Then he thought, "The world is bigger than just my father and mother." And he began to bow to the heavens, to the earth, to the emperor, and to his teacher as well. He bowed to his master, although he had not yet met him. He bowed to the Buddhas, the Bodhisattva, the conditioned enlightened one, the Arahats, and to all the good people in the world, to thank them on behalf of those they had helped, for all the good deeds they have done. Evil people are to be pitied. He thought and he bowed for them, asked that their karma or coming offense might be lessened, and that they might learn to repent. Repent is a very important word, and reform. You must know how to repent and reform, otherwise you fall. You must ask for forgiveness, repentance. He thought of himself as the very worst of offenders. He thought of more and more people to bow for, until he was bowing 8,037 times in the morning and 8,037 times in the evening, about 3 hours a day in all. That's why he come to know mindfulness can come about through bowing. You know, as his disciple, you know what is one condition that is very important and very strict. You must fulfill, he said. He want to become his disciple, he said. But he's very lenient, he said. You must bow to Sakyamuni Buddha, he said. Namo Bunsi Sijiamuni Pho. 10,000 bow. Maximum 3 months. That's what I did. I did everything within 1 or 2 months. And after that, I realized the mindfulness really came. Because the faith, the sadha, the virya were very strong. Then the sati just came. I just bow. I don't want to know. Body and mind as one. Zuk, zuk, zuk. Then after that, every movement, every action is very mindful. That's how it connects with the four foundations of mindfulness. Then also my past. Because after I did that, I remember I met one more teacher, a Thai monk, who talked about the highest meditation. Then I just connect the two. He said, we choose aware every action, every movement in the present moment. Ah, that is the highest meditation. He said, I said, this is what the four foundation of mindfulness is. That's why everything fit in. At first, I don't quite really understand. Cannot connect. Until when he said this, then that bowing that I did, yeah, together with this, I combined the two cultivation. And within 2 weeks, my sati stabilized. Daily mindfulness stabilized. Throughout the day, I was fully aware, fully mindful. And I can carry it to my sleep. And I never sleep. 24 hours inside the aware. Even when I wake up, the thought or whatever consciousness continue. Yeah. That time was really amazing. Huh. The cultivation was so different. That's why nobody can understand. And I cannot share and talk about it at that time because it's so different. Huh. That time was 1988, I think. Huh. Then 1989, everything just happened. So that training was so beautiful, 86 to 89. Huh. But I met all my teachers and finished off in 1992. After that, no more teacher until today. No more guide, no more teacher. I don't even, well, my last teacher told me if there is no earthly guide, earthly guide, you know what is earthly guide? The human beings, huh? Or the earthly beings. There will be this astral, in the astral, yeah, guide. But didn't. Since that time, 92 until now, 20 years later, there was none. So that was the beautiful part of it. Huh? No more. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't need anything anymore. Mm. Everything just the way it is. And everything was just so beautiful. It just happened. And this nature just flow, echo. That's why it's not keen to like share or do anything. Like Hui Ning, huh? You know how many years later only he started to come out to share. He has to hide himself almost for 15 years. Yeah. I only came out and share when somebody invited me. One of the Dhamma sisters, I think the year 2004. So 2004 to 1989, also 15 years, 14 to 15 years later. Because that time nobody know me. And everything just like normal. I was like a normal human being. That was the year actually I came out from the government sector to test myself in the private sector. I resigned from a very good government statutory job. Then I came out to the private sector to test myself that time. Oh, very beautiful. Those were the years. Then after that, I retired in the year 2001. From my official engineering career. Okay, what time already? Oh, okay. We got another 8 minutes. Okay. Maybe I will finish off this part. So the bowing part is finished. So now you go to fourth paragraph. Roman number 11. The master didn't let others see him bow. He rose at 4 in the morning, washed his face and went outside, lit a stick of incense, and bowed regardless of the weather. If there was snow on the ground, he bowed in the snow. In the evening, after everyone in the household had gone to bed, he went outside and bowed again. He kept up this practice daily for 6 years. No wonder his daily mindfulness becomes so good. His failure, devotion, which had become known far beyond his village, so that people refer to him as the failure son Pai, continued after his parents' death. When his mother was buried, he remained beside her grave, where he sat in meditation for 3 years. The winter, wind and rain and snow and ice and the hot summer sun found their way into the heart of the Sohan stocks that he built for himself. Clothed only in a rag robe, he ate one meal a day when food was offered to him. If none was offered, he did not eat. He never lay down when he slept. Only once during his vigil did he leave the gravesite, when he went to the three conditioned temple at Pingfang Station, south of Harbin. You know Harbin, very cold, huh? The winter are very cold. You see the snow carving. Huh? To receive the Samanera or Novik precept from the great master Zhang Zi. At the site of his mother's grave, the master read many sutta. When he first read the Dhamma Flower Sutta, this is a Lotus Sutta, he jumped for joy. He kneeled and recited it for 7 days and 7 nights, forgetting to eat, forgetting to sleep, until eventually blood flowed from his eyes and his vision dimmed. Then he read the great Surangama Sutta, thoroughly investigating the great samadhi and quietly contemplate it. The three stopping, the three contemplation, neither moving nor still, the master had said of this experience. This poem was written by him after he had that experience. I began to obtain a single-minded and profound stillness and to penetrate the pneumona state. You know what is pneumona? Opposite of phenomena. Phenomena, you know, a phenomena, a movement or whatever. Anything perceivable by the mind is a phenomena. Understand? A pneumona is the opposite of a phenomena. Yeah. Pneumona is you cannot talk about it. Yeah. There is no movement at all, no condition at all. That's why it's called a pneumona. But it is the overall. All of phenomena is within pneumona. Understand? That's why I like the great Tao. Nothing is apart from the Tao. So that's it. When I read the Avatamsaka Sutta, the enlightenment became boundless in its scope. You know this Avatamsaka Sutta, I already explained to you. They call it Hua Yan Jing, I think. It talks about the cultivation of the Bodhisattva to become a Sama Sambuddha. It's a very long sutta. It's a very profound sutta. Became boundless in its scope, indescribable in its magnificence, unsurpassed in its loftiness, and ineffable in its clarity. National Master Qing Liang said, opening and disclosing the mysterious and subtle, understanding and expanding the mind and its state, exhausting the principle while fathoming the nature, penetrating the result which include the cause, deep, wide and interfused, vast, great and totally complete. This one you cannot understand until you enlighten. You must develop the enlightenment. Otherwise this poem is no meaning to you. They try to use word to describe the indescribable. Understand or not? But if you have realized and gone through, you understand what they say. And it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. It is certainly so. It is certainly so. At that time, I could not put down the text. That's why Master Chen Hua also confirmed the poem that this great Master Qing Liang said. That's why he agreed completely. It's certainly so, it's certainly so. At that time, I could not put down the text, and I bow to and recite the great sutta. As if it were clothing from which one must not part, or food which one could not do without for even a day. And I vow to see myself to its vast circulation. So he has this vow to promote this teaching, the great Buddha's teaching, how to become a Sama Sambuddha. When the master's filial duty were completed, he went into seclusion in Amitabha cave. in the mountains, east of his house village. There he dwelt deeply into dhyan meditation and practiced the rigorous asceticism, eating only pine nuts and drinking spring water. The area abounded in wild beasts, but they never disturbed the master. Wolves and bears behaved like house pets. Tigers stopped to listen to his teaching, and wild birds gathered to hear the wonderful Dhamma. After his stay in the mountain, the master returned to Three Condition Monastery, where he worked tirelessly for the propagation of Dhamma, and where he helped the venerable master Changzi and Zhangren to greatly expand the monastery. During those years, he visited many of the local Buddhist monasteries, attended intensive meditation and recitation sessions, and walked many miles to listen to lecture on the sutta. In addition to lecturing on the sutta himself, he visited various non-Buddhist religious establishments and learned thoroughly about their belief. Okay. After that, I think he went to Puthosan. In 1946, the master made a pilgrimage to Puthosan, where he received the complete precept of a bhikkhu in 1947. Okay, we stop here, so that we can continue. So this one is another phase. After he become a full-fledged bhikkhu, after he has taken the full bhikkhu's precept, complete precept. That was 1947. I was not born yet. How many of you are born already? Okay, do you have any question? Do you have any question you can ask? Is it clear? Exactly 4:30. I promise you last session, 1.5 hours. Really, exactly 1.5 hours. You got any question? You can ask. Anything that you want to make clear or whatever that you are not sure of. Yes, Ingrid. You use this one. Use the mic. It helps.
But the 10,000 bows is just kneeling and bow like the normal Theravada.
Yes. Normal Theravada.
Not
but
Mahayana,
you can modify. Like I teach you at the retreat in Fraser's Hill. Instead of chanting, if you are Mandarin educated, then very easy. I use the Mandarin version. Namo Bunshi Shi Jia Moni Fo. As I chant, I mindfully bow. Then as I rise, I very mindful. Then I chant, I bow again. I realize when I just do that, don't try to know anything. Just allow the mindfulness to develop, the faith, the sadha, the virya, and the sati. Just do. Then you will come to understand yourself. The mind will fall into place. Then totally no more thinking. Throughout the day, your body and mind move as one. Then as you come out also, you are very mindful. Every movement, every action. Very funny. You just go and do it. But the faith must be very strong.
I've tried very deal, but if we are mindful, then we lost count.
You don't try to count. That's why I say forget about the counting. What you can do is, you just try. 5 minutes, you set the clock. Okay? The first time, maybe, you try to count. Then roughly you know, 5 minutes, how many bow. And I can tell you, 5 minutes is a lot of bow. I only count for 1 minute to know roughly how long I take. Then I remember, every day, every session, I do about 10 minutes only. Then after that, 1 day, 3 times. And that 10 minutes is so wonderful. But it was real mindfulness. Real mindfulness. Then sometimes I extend it to 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and maximum was half an hour. When you are already set into the rhythm, it just happened by itself. It just happened by itself. And there was so much joy. At night, I wake up middle of the night and do myself. Because not nice to disturb people. Then early morning, I wake up very early also, I do. Then afternoon, in the office, I lock my door, I do. That's why you never understand how the cultivator cultivates. When the heart really wants to do it, Because when you understand the importance of it, you just do. And it was so beautiful. It just happened. That's why you must have faith. The sattva must be very strong. Then your virya will come. Then when you do, your sati will come. And when sati come, you no need to do anything. The first factor, enlightenment, will bring forth the rest. With sati, you start to see everything. Throughout the day, everything I start to see. The thing that I never see before, my thought, my mental innate, all I start to see. Then I can see people. I can see a lot of things happening. Because there is no more thinking. It's just aware. So different. Don't try to be mindful. The question I think Andy want to ask. Yes.
Brother Teo, what is the difference in this bowing versus the earlier meditation practice of rising? And, I mean, doing the walking meditation.
Okay.
Because you basically cut yourself off from all thoughts and you just concentrate on that, and the mindfulness of sati is very strong.
Okay, very good question. You see, when you develop the cultivation, the meditation, you must know what you are doing. If you don't know what you are doing, then you only believe and you follow instruction. No meaning. Understand? That's why, for me, I got this character. Very funny. Since young, I will never do anything if I don't understand. I never do. Even I come to work, my boss can give me a job. If I don't have the full detail, I don't want to start. I will go and ask for file, the history behind, the term of reference. When I have the full picture, then I start. Otherwise, I'm wasting my time. Understand? So you must understand, why do you bow? Like the Buddha's teaching. The puja that he introduces for what? Devotional practice. Understand? You have to develop this spiritual faculty. The devotional practice is to bring you the condition for this spiritual faculty to evolve. The meaning about bowing is what? First, respect. Understand that? And you respect because you understand who the teacher is. You don't worship him. Understand that? The respect comes from this, what they call gratitude. And at the same time, through knowing how special and wonderful he is. He is the fully enlightened one, perfect in wisdom, perfect in virtue. And his teaching is so beautiful because it stands up to investigation. So that very strong faith, that very strong virya come about through understanding how unique and how special the Buddha is. And his teaching, which you put to cultivate investigation, it stands up to investigation. Then there is so much joy and the faith becomes so strong. Then your mind becomes so calm and so composed. When sadda and virya is there, your spiritual faculty will move your sati. That's why when you bow, it's totally different. But the trouble with Theravada is, we bow only 3 times. Then when we finish, we bow another 3 times. Then the rest of the time, you sit and you walk. That's why the Buddha, he has to teach differently, because he doesn't expect people to understand the significance of this. So your initial coming into contact with the Buddha Dharma is he tried to create the condition for you to actually develop the meditation and understand his teaching easily. You see, if you don't develop the spiritual faculty, there is no condition for you to understand his teaching because the hindrance of mind will be there. But once you develop, the hindrance of mind will disappear. And the most important one is sati, heedfulness. Without sati, the Buddha already say very clearly, you are as if dead. Understand? The heedless are as if dead. That's why first thing you have to train your mind in sati. And the easiest way to train is what? How do you do it? That's why the Buddha under the Satipatthana Sutta, he said Anapanasati. Understand? Because he find it so useful. He started from there. And this breath is very neutral. Everybody can do. But not everybody is suitable. Understand that? That's why certain disciples, he asked them to use different object of meditation. That's why he teach his son, Rahula. You know what did he teach his son? 7 type of meditation. He said, meditate on the meditation on metta, loving kindness. Then on compassion. Then on impermanent. On death. Then anapanasati. Altogether 7. I cannot remember them all. And all this you can develop. They are to create the condition for you to receive the Dhamma and the truth. That's why he got his teaching, the 5 daily contemplation. Every day you contemplate, different type of wisdom will arise. Then they got the 4 foundation of mindfulness to develop sati and all those things. Then you have the Noble Eightfold Path, starting with your thought, the right effort to see your mental intention. So all this is like teaching all over. So it's like a zigzag puzzle. You have the pieces here, there. But nobody able to show you the full picture. Means you don't know how to put your pieces together. But when somebody point it out to you, and all these zigzag puzzles fall into place, then you see the overall picture. Then everything becomes so clear. In fact, all the teaching are connected. When you have sati, everything becomes clear. That's why don't try to know anything. Just train the mind. Develop mindfulness and heedfulness. When you are heedful, means you are ever mindful to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Then from there, all the teaching become clear. Everything become clear. I realize it is sati, nothing else. Mindfulness. That's why the bowing, whatever that can help you to train this mind to develop sati, use it. And that's anapanasati or whatever. Actually, all these are skillful means. That's why the Mahayana, some they use chanting. Understand not? Some they use this, what they call, they like, you see them walk around. Huh? One session. Huh? Lao Fo. They use the ting, then they walk. Huh? Then they chant. Some they chant, Namo Kwan Si Yin Pu Sa. Then some Amitofo, Amitofo, Amitofo. And all this is how you train your mind in awareness. Understand not? Mindfulness. That's why this Guang Qing Lao He Sang is very good. He explained the Dhamma very clearly. Because people ask him, where is the Western paradise? Si Fang Si Jie, you know? The Pure Land belief in the Western paradise. He said the Western paradise is in your heart. He said when you chant the Buddha's name or Kuan Yin Bodhisattva's name, chant until it is so clear that there is no one chanting. You know what is no one chanting? The vibration that you arise and the word become one. It's just like when you bow. Your movement and the mind become one. That's not. When it's one, there is no thought, no word, nothing. So that's why all this become suddenly clear. Then when it become clear, it connect. When it connect, only the one, the form and mind that do that, can understand. Because the mind will cease. And when the mind cease, it connect with the nature. And when it connects with the nature, there is no words. Understand? That's why the silent mind is the beginning of real meditation. And that is real apamada, heedfulness. When you are ever mindful, means without thought. Understand? Ever mindful of what? The cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. Ever mindful of the meditation. That's why Dhammapada verse 23 confirmed exactly. He said, the constantly meditative, the ever mindful, and the steadfast one will realize the bond-free Nibbana. What is constantly meditative? Constantly cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path. Understand? Ever mindful means you are throughout the day mindful, aware. That's why the constantly meditative and ever mindful, if you hold on to this steadfast one, they will definitely realize the bond-free Nibbana. Enlightenment. So you only need to cultivate mindfulness and use it to develop the meditation as taught by the Buddha. That's why the Buddha called this apamada, heedfulness. If you can be ever mindful to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, which is a meditation as taught by the Buddha, you are heedful. You have apamada. And the heedful never die. So that's why Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23 very clearly talk about the importance of training your mind to be heedful, to be ever mindful, to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. So what they teach you is not important. It's what you understand that you know how to do yourself. Like you go to retreat. Why they ask you to note this, note that? Every teacher give you different meditation object. You have to find out. In the name of doing all this, what am I doing? Understand? You don't gullibly go and believe, if I note this, I am doing meditation. If I note my breath, I am doing meditation. No, meditation hasn't begun yet. Understand? This is just to train your mind. This is just to anchor your mind. Where all of object of meditation is just an object of meditation or a skillful mean to anchor your mind, to train your mind so that it is centered, relaxed, and aware. When you are aware of the object of meditation, you are with the moment. Where all the object of meditation is with the moment. Understand? Whether it's a breathing, rising, falling, or a chanting, or a hand movement, or what, is always in the moment. When you are mindful of it, it is always the mind silent in the awareness. Understand? So that is the initial training. So that the mind is aware, not heedlessly lost in thought, not wandering off. So when you understand the importance of that training, then you realize this is not meditation yet. Understand? It's train your mind to be aware, heedful, to arise sati, the third spiritual faculty. Without sati, there is no spiritual life. The heedless are as if dead, very clear. Without sati, there is no first factor of enlightenment. You cannot proceed. The second factor of enlightenment is use this mindfulness to investigate the Dhamma. That's why Dhamma Vichaya is the second enlightenment factor. So, whatever you do in the name of meditation, first, tupak, train the mind to have mindfulness, sati, that is the first part. And you can do from any method and anything. That's why bowing, walking, or whatever. Then after that, use that mindfulness to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, that's it. And the Noble Eightfold Path is very wide. Samasati, the four foundation of mindfulness is there. Understand? Then you have right view. You need to have the direct seeing, to have the wisdom, to have the right view, to confirm the right view that the Buddha spoke about. That's why you have to investigate into all the teaching. That's why you went from Kaya Nupassana into Vedana Nupassana, Chitta Nupassana, and Dhamma Nupassana to confirm his teaching. Then the awakening, the understanding will come. Then it will strengthen your right view. Your faith becomes even more strong. Then when you are able to confirm the Buddha's teaching, when the Dhamma stand up to investigation, your spiritual faculty becomes unshakable. At that time, you will definitely awaken. It becomes balas or powers. When your faith is unshakable, your virya is unshakable, your sati, mindfulness is so stable, unshakable, samadhi and panya, you definitely enlighten. So that's how the understanding can actually help you. So whatever you do, you must do with understanding. Do not be gullible. Do not just follow instruction blindly. The problem with a lot of cultivator and meditator is every time they do that training, or what they call the method and the technique that they have been told to do, when they note this and note that, they thought they are meditating. That is where a lot of misunderstanding happens. That is not the meditation yet. Meditation can only begin when you have the silent mind, when you have the inner awareness, the heedfulness within. Okay? Does it answer your question? Catherine, you want to ask something? Use the mic.
meaning bowing is one of the techniques or methods to reach this state to begin. I mean.
Okay, I will help you to rephrase the question. Huh? So, bowing is one of the way to develop mindfulness. Yeah? Is that your question? Yeah. You see, bowing actually is a lot more than that. Yeah? Like I said, you develop the sadha, the virya, the spiritual faculty, the faith and the zeal, spiritual zeal. Then when you have these two, when you bow, the mindfulness will come. Understand or not? It will definitely help you because it has helped so many people. So it's up to you. When you do this, I tell you, the direct experience that I have, after I did the bowing, my daily mindfulness become very stable. You know what happened? Every time I sit, I got no problem. I got no hindrance of mind, nothing. I just, boom, silent. But I fully aware. And all the mindfulness inside is so clear, so beautiful. The mind is just silent. That's why I realized so easy to meditate. Why you want to train? When you don't have mindfulness, that's why you have to train. That's why you have to endure the pain, the numbness, and all those things. But when the mindfulness is there, you sit. The moment you sit, not only no pain, everything is just so relaxed, so calm, so peaceful, and so quiet. Where your mind doesn't run anymore. It's always with the moment. Any movement inside. You want to be at the heart, it's at the heart. You want to listen to the heartbeat, it is aware there. No need stethoscope. You want to be at the anapanasati, it's there. You want to feel any part, you can feel inside your body. That's why you need sati. You need mindfulness. Without mindfulness, a lot of the thing you do is without understanding. Because you are trying to like focus and concentrate. Focusing and concentrate doesn't develop the meditation, I tell you. When you focus means what? You try to use your mind to do. You are actually invoking what they call concentration, a thought-based thing. What you should do is just relax and aware. Whatever happens, just allow the mind to go and do what it like, but develop the awareness of it. Just feel it, aware. That you need to anchor it to something because it keeps on running. So you need to do something so that you are always mindful and aware. So that's why they have this object of meditation to train. Every time the awareness runs, the Buddha say, bring it back. Understand? It's no different from bowing, isn't it? Every time when you bow, your thought runs. You bring it back and bow. Develop the mindfulness on that movement. That's why the four posture you can meditate. Understand? Just because the sutta never mentioned, a lot of people panic. Understand? But bowing is one of the most important training. The Buddha called this reverential salutation. Understand? Four things grow if you do that. What are the four things? Ayu, wana, sukang, and palang. What are they? Ayu is long life. Sukang is happiness, joy. Wana is fair complexion. Palang is strength. Give you strength in whatever you do. And I tell you, if you do the bowing and have these four things, you know how powerful you are or not. Ayu is long life. Not only this physical being long life, the spiritual life. Understand or not? The spiritual life, very long. Wana, of course, is fair complexion. Understand or not? That one for most people, especially ladies. This is one of the things that you need in life. But sukang, happiness and joy, this is what you need to meditate. Understand? To live the good life and the happy. So if you don't have sukang, you cannot meditate. Means when you meditate, a lot of pain, a lot of irritation. So when you have sukang, you easily enter samadhi. The piti will come, the sukang will come. Then tranquility, paucity will come. That's so easy to meditate. Palang is the most important. Strength. Spiritual strength. Understand not? The strength for you to realize and achieve whatever you want. That's why the bowing, the meris is very powerful. And it's one of the 10 meritorious actions. And when you invoke the power of these merits, because you pay respect to who? Sakyamuni Buddha, understand? The fully enlightened one. The field of merit is immeasurable. That's why the merits, yeah, and the what they call the important benefits of bowing, people don't understand. I always tell myself during the early day when I understood this, when I heard from Acharyantra, I reflect, I contemplate. Not only I develop the faith, the virya, and the mindfulness, sati, I exercise my body, understand? Yeah? Then I develop what? Humility. If I can pay respect and bow, I'm very humble. That's why I pay respect to my parents, the worthy ones. And even whoever that I have conditioned, I will pay respect. Even people I don't know, but I can feel that he is worthy of respect, I will pay respect. And this is what people cannot understand, because the wisdom part is lacking. Yeah. So that humility that bring about what they call the lowering of the egoic mind, the understanding of who you are and what you are, is only a form of my mind expressing something, gratitude and what? Respect. And these are basic virtue to cultivate. If you cannot even do this, you are not a cultivator. Understand? So respect is so beautiful. Paying reverential salutation, the bowing is so meaningful, so beautiful. That's how I did a lot. Yeah. And this is something you must do. Last time when I cultivate, I tell you, every time I go to temple, first thing I go to the shrine hall, I pay respect, I do all the salutation, everything, then only I come out, then only I start my activity. Then before I leave, I will do it again. I reach home, the altar, I will do. Then every day, morning, before I sleep, I will do. Every time I enter the house and before I come out of the house, I will do. That was the time when I cultivate, non-stop. Then I go to people's house, if there is any altar, I will do. I will pay respect. Yeah. That's how I developed the very strong sadha, the virya. Then wherever I go, any monastery, any temple, I will pay respect. Those who follow me, they know you have to pay a lot of respect, even to the Thailand trip. So many, every place you go, you have to do it. So respect, if you know how to do it, you can really cultivate so much virtue, so much goodness, and the spiritual faculty. And this is something that is not taught to the Theravada tradition. Yeah. But the Mahayana do a lot. That's why they got this bowing. They call what? I don't know what they call. Gumboy used to explain to me. You all want stand up? Posturing, I know. You do many times. When you all do go through that type of what they call, I don't know what you call. They used to, it's like a training one. When you chant certain sutta or don't know what, then you do this bowing many times.
The Tibetan
one. No. Tibetan is different. Tibetan one prostrate. They lie flat on the ground one. That one they go to the holy place. Mahayana one I saw in all the Mahayana. They every time do, together with the there is one fellow, ting, then you do. Then ting, you do. I see a lot in this Oakland Road there, that temple last time. Then He Ming Si, they also do a lot. Xuan Hua's, I think. He Ming Si, you know, the one in KL. Then there is the other one, Xuan Hua one is what? Zi Ying Tong. What is that you call? They got a lot of these places where they have the, what they call, photo. Yes. Sister Lee will show you.
Okay, Brother Teo. Yes. So, bowing this thing, must it be in front of Buddha's
not nature? Necessary. You see, the Buddha nature is everywhere. So, when you are on a retreat, in the hotel room or what, you just face any direction. You can do. In my room also, I face any direction. You don't have to have a Buddha image. It's just symbolic. Recall to mind. But that is not the Buddha. Sister Lee will show it to you. How they do?
This beats all 108. So what you do? Start. This is a starting point. So you start with the first beat. If I want to bow with Namo Guan Si Ying Pusa.
Yeah, yeah, that one very beautiful. Yeah, yes, yes, yeah, yeah. The sweating, the perspiration is very uniform. That's why you not only exercise, it happen. Ah, Mifo want to ask you a question. Yes, he say the sweat is very even. Yeah. I will repeat. The beats, they have 108 of them. So every time you do the bowing, Shi Chan Namo Kwan Si Ying Pusa, when you do it mindfully, the beat move one. So by the time you finish 108, she said, you will be very different. There is this sweat very even throughout. But most of the time, you become very mindful. Towards the later part, you become very mindful. Every movement is so different.
And it can give you, if you do it well, it can give you about half a day by very peaceful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Very calm. Your mind state will change because when you don't have thought, most of the time aware and mindful, that state is different. That sati is mindfulness. And you can do it for certain period, even 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Sometimes even 1 minute of that sati is so beautiful, so different. When your mind can be silent without thought, even for 10 seconds, it's so beautiful. So you try. If you don't try, you cannot understand. Like swimming, you can talk about it. The Olympic swimmer, how good, butterfly stroke, they do this. As long as you don't go into the water, you cannot understand what swimming is. If you still hold on to the float and talk, no use. Let go of the float. Then you find out what is the real swimming. Don't hold on to anything. Go into the water. Then everything you learn, that is reality. Then when you really can swim without any float, that is the real swimming. That one, there is a lot of joy. Nobody can explain to you except the guy who did it. Otherwise, theory, understand? That's what you must do. When you do, you understand. Don't worry about people's comment. When you understand what you do, you just do. I can tell you when I cultivate. My life is very funny. Everything unconventional, everything I do. I blow flute, I hold the flute this way. The other way, the standard one is this direction. I always hold this direction. But I play it very well. And a lot of things I do is the reverse one. Like the arithmetic or math, how you are at. You are at from the left-hand side, then you move to the right-hand side, right? I add from the right and go to the left one. I add the big number first, then I finish off with a small number. And I do it very fast. That's why I do a lot of things very different. Then when I was young, I was so simple. People like to dress out and what? No, I'm very simple. You know what other clothes I dress, I wear or not? My father and my mother at that time, we are okay, but we are having a big family. I got 9 brothers and sisters. So my father is very frugal. My mother is even more frugal. So you know, 9 brothers and sisters, every year you got to make clothing, uniform, go to school. That time you cannot find the type of money to buy new, understand? You know what my mother did? He go and buy this very cheap cloth. 1 meter, $1. one ringgit at a time, and come back and sew. She doesn't learn tailoring. She just sew. She just learn from seeing how people do. Then she come back and sew. You know what other shirt I got or not? The sleeve, one short, one long. Then sometimes this one also, the dimension all out. Then the buttoning also. But for me, it's okay. I appreciate what my mother did for me, and I have a lot of joy. Even I would go to school, people laugh at me. For me, inside, I smile. I say, "Bill, you don't know how to appreciate what your mother has given you." And a lot of time, they laugh at me because when I was young, I don't even have a watch until I was form 5. And I very simple, very simple. But at that time, very funny. I can never like become unhappy. Because nowadays a lot of kids, peer pressure, you cannot get, they blame their parents for not giving it to them. For me, it's the other way around. I realize our family is so big. And I don't want all these things actually. Until today, I didn't wear a watch. I don't have anything. And very funny, I don't like all this type of thing. That's why I say, my life is always the other way around. That's why later on when I realize what the Dhamma is, it's also the other way around. Not the conventional truth. Not the one that the living being think. Yeah. What you think is the truth, very logical appear to you, is always the opposite. Like you think this body is very real, you think you are very real, you think the mind is very real, all the feeling that you arise, it's so real to you. But I can see it's so different. Totally the other way around. That's why I say it's very good to be unconventional. So don't worry about what people say. You just do what you understand. That's it. And that's how I came through life. Then I realized when I have the inheritance, the past, everything go my way. Everything is like I am so blessed and so lucky. It's nothing to do with luck actually. Later on I realized I inherited them, that's it. And the way I understand things is very strange. That's why I tell a lot of those who follow me, this life I cannot understand on all this. All the things that I can share with you and teach you, this life I cannot understand on it. But funny, inside it understands itself. Then when I read all these things, I understand it differently. Master Chen Hua already very good. But there are certain parts. Later on, as we go through, you will see there is still slightly run, quite a lot. Because the traditional Theravada one very accurate. Because the words are, the Pali words are very accurate. Even the tree turning run. Not much, but a little bit. So all this you will come to understand. No more problem. Okay.
Brother Teo, yes.
Not necessary, because you see, the Heart Sutta happened to be also Mahayana Sutta. So my advice is, when you do the cultivation, don't worry whether it's Theravada, Mahayana or Vajrayana. Whatever that can bring about understanding, that can help you to progress, use it, that's it. Don't go and argue. So don't develop all the form delusion or view delusion. If you try to glorify certain vehicle like Mahayana or Theravada, then you end up arguing because you create division. Understand? Not? The Buddha Dharma is just the truth that the Buddha teach. The Buddha never create Buddhism, never create Theravada, never create Mahayana and Vajrayana. It's the human being, the disciple and all those followers subsequently divide into all this. Even within Mahayana, there are so many sects.
Do they actually contradict each other?
No. If you understand the Dhamma, everything is the same. The Four Noble Truths is the same. The three characteristics is the same. The dependent origination is the same. All the teaching is the same. It's only the words. When you don't understand the word, you interpret. That's why it appears different to you. Leslie. Yes. 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 Never mind. Use the mic, Leslie. Use the mic. Yes.
Pure land.
Yes.
It's
yeah.
The state of mind, the emptiness. In Theravada,
okay.
We
okay. I will explain it to you. Very good question. Sister Leslie wants to know. That's why I say when the words are used differently, it appears that it's different. But the Western paradise also talk about Nibbana. It's the same. It's only that they have this additional Pure Land thing. That's not all. Pure Land is not within your 31 plane of existence. Do you know that? The 31 plane of existence where the 10 fetters that chain the living being to this, what they call universe, is within the 31 plane of existence that the Buddha talked about. But Pure Land is a totally different manifestation. It comes through the vow of the Sammasambuddha, Anasana. When you have this great vow, it becomes a nature's law. You know what is nature's law, no? That's why last time, a lot of these people, cultivator, who actually don't agree with Mahayana, you know what they say, no? He say, where got such sutta one? Where got such thing as Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, 10,000 hand, 10,000 eye, can be everywhere doing everything? He's only one person, understand? They have this type of thought, where they use the thought. And you cannot understand. Then I explain to them, do you know how they function or not? How come they can have so many manifestations? And they can be whatever you do. Because the vow that they make, they are so powerful and so heavy. They are the Buddha or the Buddha to be. Their perfection, their wisdom, everything is so perfect. And because of that, they know how to make the adhitana, the vow. And when they make this vow, it becomes a nature's law. Understand? That's why those who chant the four how, understand? The what they call the name of the Buddha or Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. If you do it sincerely, sincerely, you will connect to the vow. There will be a response. That's why you don't have to have Kuan Yin or Sakyamuni, or Amitabha Buddha to be there, because that vow takes care of itself. Understand? So if you connect, they use the word Xiang Yin. If you pay respect to Amitabha Buddha, the Pure Land, if you really have the faith, then you make the aspiration, and it mesh with the vow of Amitabha Buddha or Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. Then there will be a response. Then you will connect. Then you can take birth in Pure Land. And that state is not the 31 plane of existence. And you cannot understand. And it's from there they cultivate. Because the conditions are different. It's through the great vow. That's why certain Buddha create Pure Land. Certain Buddha don't have. Sakyamuni don't have a Pure Land. Amitabha has. Yao Si Fo has. Understand? The medicine Buddha and all those other great Buddhas. It depends on what you understand and what you want. Because Sakyamuni is wisdom way. That's why he teaches you wisdom. That's it. Amitabha is faith. Sada, faith. So through faith, you can connect to his vow. Then you can connect to the Pure Land that he created. And all this can manifest. That's why when you don't understand, don't simply comment and say things. It's very dangerous. Have an open mind. Understand not? So, Pure Land or whatever, Nibbana can be realized. Finally, it's still Nibbana. It's still realizing the perfection to be an enlightened one. And you want to be a Buddha, then it's a totally different cultivation. You have to take the long way. The Bodhisattva way. So all this, no contradiction whatsoever. Don't think that Pure Land is a different enlightenment. No. Finally, it's still Nibbana. Pusan Pumya. The cessation of form and mind. You return, everything ceases. then you return to that nature, the oneness nature, nothing else. Yeah. Okay? Yeah. Any more questions? Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Use the mic. Thank you. Yeah.
Brother Teo, just yeah. Now you're referring to the yes. What plane of existence?
31 plane.
But
yeah.
This one,
oh, you haven't heard before. Okay, I explain a bit.
Mahayana, we don't have all this. Oh, so
okay.
God.
You all call it the 10 Dhamma Rhyme.
Dhamma Rhyme.
You all call it the 10 Dhamma Rhyme. Si Fa Jie. Fa Jie. But you all only up to the 6. That's why you all call Liu Tao Lun Hui. Your Liu Tao is the 31 plane of existence. I explained to you, it's the same. That's why it appears so different. You see, Theravada, they say there are 4 willful state, suffering rhyme. They call it karma dukkati. You know what is karma or not? Not the karma you used to listen. This one is K-A-M-A. It stands for sensual. So sensual rhyme, I write on the board. Ah, okay. You help me to write. K-A-M-A, karma. Karma. K-A-M-A. Karma, Sukati and Dukati. S-U-G-A-T-I, Sukati. Then Dukati is D-U-K-K-H-A. T-I. No, Dukati, T-T-I. T-I. Okay. Here, the word karma is sensual. The sensual world of suffering. The sensual world of happiness or joy. Eh? So our human rhyme is at the 5th. And the Deva rhyme is the 6th. That's why they are called the happy rhyme. Then the 4, suffering rhyme, the woeful state. You know what are the 4 or not? You all heard before, isn't it? The demon. Below the human is the demon, asura. After the demon is animal rhyme. After animal rhyme is what? No, not yet. Beta, hungry ghost, anasana. Then after that only hell rhyme. What? That's why what they call the hungry ghost is just above the hell rhyme, understand now? At least hungry ghost, you don't suffer like the hell being. The hell being suffer like mad. Hell being is a lot of delusion, a lot of greed. No. From the human rhyme, you go down to asura. Asura are the demons. They are the highest of the 4 willful state. Then after that, you have the animal rhyme. Then only the hungry ghost. Then the hell rhyme is the most suffering one. This come about because the hell rhyme, you have all the 3 evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. That's why you go down to hell. Understand now? The betas, or the what they call hungry ghosts, they only greed. Understand now? You have a lot of greed, a lot of selfishness. Its chances of rebirth in the what they call this beta rhyme is very high. Understand now? Animal rhyme is delusion. Understand now? When you have a lot of stupidity, delusion, most of them are born as animal. But if you are very angry, very violent, very emotional, you can become demons. So all these are due to your evil roots. Understand now? These are all the suffering rhymes. Then after that is the 5th rhyme, the human rhyme. They call it manusa. This is a happy rhyme. But the funny thing is, human beings, are you all happy? a lot of human beings suffer. But the Buddha say it's a happy rhyme. Karma sukkati. Why are you not happy? That's why ask yourself. Why am I not happy? Why am I not peaceful? I'm supposed to be in a happy rhyme because of your delusion, because of your evil roots. That's why you are not careful. The evil root can bring you down to the woeful state. That's why you can be reborn as hell beings, as petas, the hungry ghosts, or as what they call animals or demons. All these are the willful state, the suffering state. You suffer a lot, especially the hell rhyme. You know how the hell rhyme suffer. The Buddha God gave this analogy, very, very beautiful. He tell this, I think the monk and the lay people who ask him the question of what is hell like. He said, take for example, he said, if you are a criminal, caught by the authority in the society for committing certain very bad crime, then what is the punishment, is it? During the time of the Buddha, they don't have what they call gun and other thing to assassinate you, or hang you. They got what they call torture chamber, like soldier, is it? If the king were to instruct the soldier, early morning, spear you 100 times, then don't let you die. Then afternoon, spear another 100 times, don't let you die. Then at night, spear another 100 times, don't let you die. Suffer or not? You suffer or not? Very, very severe suffering there. He said, this is nothing. This type of suffering is nothing compared to hell. You ask yourself whether you want to go down or not. This type of suffering is nothing compared to hell. There is a sutta on this. I forgot the name already. So you have to be very, very careful. That's why the Buddha said, be heedful, do not be heedless. Do not arise the evil root that give you the condition to take rebirth in the hell realm, the willful state. That's why avoid all evil. All evil you must avoid, otherwise you suffer. Then above the human is they call devas, devas. But the Mahayana call it Tian Fa Jie, Tian, the heavenly realm. They don't call deva, they call it the heavens. That's why Theravada is different. Theravada they break into devas, brahmas, and the formless arupa. We are within the sensual realm. Sometimes the 31 plane of existence, they call it the three world. You know what are the three world? The sensual world, the form world, and the formless world. That's why you got Kama Loka, Rupa Loka, and Arupa Loka. Arupa is the formless. Rupa is the form world. So the human being, the willful state, 4+1, and the Deva rhyme, or the heavenly rhyme, this six rhyme, they are called sensual rhyme, Kama Loka. Then the Brahmas, 16 rhyme, they are called the form rhyme, Rupa Loka. Then there is four more, formless rhyme. You add them all together, it's 31 plane of existence. But Mahayana, they subdivide all these 31 plane into six. That's why they are Tian Fa Jie, the six rhyme of the heavenly rhyme, include the devas, the brahmas, and the formless rhyme. They add them all together. And there's a six deva rhyme, 16 brahma rhyme, and the four formless rhyme. So all together, 26 plus the five below, 31. So you understand? So that's how it is the same. You may think it's very different. They always say Mahayana talk about the six rhyme, Liu Tao Lun Hui. Theravada talk 31 of existence, and they argue over numbers. Because when you don't understand, it appears very different. But when you understand, it's the same. It's how you categorize. Then the Mahayana go further. They say 10 Dharma rhyme. You know what are the other three above the heavenly realm? You have what they call the sound hearer. Sound hearer. Those who hear the sound, they become enlightened. These are what the Buddha called the first stage of sainthood, second stage of sainthood, and the third stage of sainthood. Then the Arahant, sometimes they also classify as the sound hearer. So all the saints that the Buddha talked about under Theravada, Sotapan, first stage of sainthood, Sakadagami, second stage of sainthood, Anagami, third stage, and the Arahant is under this seven rhyme. They call it Senwen Fajie. Senwen. Then you have what they call number eight. Number eight is what they call the conditioned enlightened one. The conditioned enlightened one are like the Pacheka Buddha. Understand not? They enlighten not due to the Four Noble Truths, due to the 12 link dependent origination. That's why they call under Mahayana, Yanjie. Then they call it by two names, Yanjiao and Dujiao. You know what is the difference? The Pacheka Buddha that become enlightened during the era where the Buddha Dharma is around, they call Yanjiao. Dujiao is the Pacheka Buddha that become enlightened on his own without the Buddha Dharma. Means without the Buddha Sasana. That one they call Dujiao. So Yan Fajie, Senwen then Yan, sound hearer, then conditioned enlightened. The ninth one is the Bodhisattva. Pusang Fajie, Bodhisattva right. Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, Ajita Bodhisattva, Manjushri, Vensu, and all the great Bodhisattva, they are all within that rhyme. Then you have the last one, Fo Fajie, the Buddha rhyme, the rhyme of all the Buddhas. All the Buddhas are there. So that's why the 10 Dhamma rhyme cover the complete, all the rhymes of the both the enlightened and the unenlightened, the conditioned and the unconditioned. So this complete the categorization or subdivision of all the enlightened beings and the non-enlightened beings. Then of course some of you will ask, what happened to the other religion? Where do they fit in? They also have their enlightened beings. So it depends on how you understand the classification. If they are enlightened, they will be within the four rhymes above, any of them. It's how you actually categorize them. Okay? So I hope that explains the whole thing. So that is the 31 plane of existence. It's actually your Liu Tao Lun Hui. Then you have your 10 Dhamma rhyme. That one is different. If you want to know more, you should read on your own, because these are not so important. It's only an understanding. The Dhamma is not really there yet. You should focus on the handful of leaf, the Four Noble Truths. Those are very important, the essence of the Buddha's teaching. Okay, I think we can break for. I think now we cross the 2 hour mark, or 2.5 hour. You take a break, then maybe we have a short meditation after this. Yeah, almost 5:30. Good morning, she got a dinner. I got to leave at 6 exactly. Okay, we will do the usual respect. We pay respect 3 times, then we start our meditation session.
Okay, just relax yourself, huh? Yeah. Okay. So today, I think everybody is here before, huh? We can start our meditation straight away, huh? Just remember, huh? You are here to train your mind. That for those who already train your mind, you can just do the meditation straight away. Actually, the formal meditation has its purpose. When you are in the formal posture, if your mind is already trained, you only need to silence your mind. Initially, maybe you anchor it to your object of meditation if you are still dependent on it. But finally, you let go of the object of meditation. Even your breathing or your rising and falling or your mantra, whatever, you just let go. Silence everything. Then see what happens. If your mind still moves, you anchor it to your heart. You just feel your heartbeat or any vibration within your heart area. Then after that, you just silence, stay there. Then finally, when it stabilizes, even that point also disappear. Then your whole mind becomes still, tranquil. The silent mind understands. Then after that, any of the six senses or anything happen, the mind is there. The awareness is there. Then that mind will understand, will see things as they are. It will understand how you function as a human being, as a living being. How the mind stir and create the aggregate of mind. How they arise and how they pass away. How they cease. Then how they create the dependent origination. How upon contact feeling comes to be. How without wisdom feeling condition craving. Craving condition grasping. Grasping condition becoming. Then you take birth and you become what you are. Then from birth the whole mess of suffering comes to be. So all this you will understand. The Four Noble Truths, everything you will come to understand. So always remember, first train your mind to be in sati. Then the formal meditation stabilize your mindfulness. Let go of your meditation object in stages. Then anchor it to the heart. Then later, if it does not run already, let go of it, free the mind. Then any of the six senses, the mind will detect. The mind will be there, the awareness will be there. Then you start to understand a lot of things. Then bring this state into the daily mindfulness to cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness, the Noble Eightfold Path. Okay, now maybe I will leave it to you all to meditate. You just have to relax your body and mind. If you want to use the mind sweeping method to train your mind, you can. Then use metta. Then after that, train yourself in anapanasati. Then if you already able to have a stable mindfulness, like I said just now, you learn to stabilize it, then let go of the meditation object. Without the meditation object, you can also be silent and peaceful and mindful and aware. That is apamada. That is heedfulness. So you try. If you cannot, you anchor it to your heart. Anchoring it to the heart is important because it's away from your brain, away from your mental, so it will not create so much thinking. Okay, I will let you do the meditation. Then I will ring the bell in 20 minutes time. Okay, you can slowly and mindfully come out of the meditation. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who are now, slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Excuse me. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness that you have developed. Try to maintain them for as long as you can. And use this awareness to cultivate the daily mindfulness, the Noble Eightfold Path. This is what you need. Okay. Today I have to leave earlier, like I said. That's why just now I cut short the time. I give you only 15 minutes. Okay, we got another 5 minutes. Anybody wants to report their meditation or ask me any question with regards to the meditation or the teaching or whatever, you make use of the time to actually learn. Anybody? Catherine, you want to report how you meditate? Just describe exactly how you do it. No need to worry about right and wrong. Describe.
I always follow the Vipassana type of meditation, which is making use of breathing in and breathing out.
Okay.
Of course, now I, as you say, I include the metta meditation first. Or sometimes I started with metta, then I continue to so-called meditation, and I will also end with metta as well.
It's okay. When you develop the training of the mind, like you say, you use the breathing, are you most of the time mindful of the in and out breath?
Many times my mind wanders away, off, but I will quickly bring it back.
Yes.
But actually it's not.
You don't have to like bring it back very fast. You just tell yourself, the untrained mind has that tendency. It will wander off. So you accept that reality. Don't go and like become unhappy over it or develop any aversion, because that is a hindrance of mind. Accept the reality of what happened. When you accept, your mind is at peace. Then it relax. Understand not? Then it can be aware. Then you allow the attention to come back to your breathing. That's why you maintain awareness of in and out breath. Be patient. After a while, it will stabilize. So the training is just to train the mind so that it is centered, aware of the breathing, no thought. That is the first training. A lot of people don't understand. They force themselves to become peaceful. They force themselves to become mindful, and that is not mindfulness anymore. When you force, it is the thought. The thought want to meditate. The thought want to be mindful. You cannot do that. You just have to relax and aware. That's it. Silence your mind. And if the awareness run, means what? Lost in thought. The thought has arisen. The hindrance of mind has arisen. Otherwise, it won't go off. Understand not? Either it is restless. That's why it went off. Understand not? Or the essential desire that draw you away, understand, into thinking. Your habitual tendency, the mind that is not trained, think a lot. Your senses are open. So every time upon contact, it trickles off consciousness. Then you are caught. You are conditioned into thinking, reacting and all that. That's how you start to understand that the mind originally, like Hui Neng say, already still at peace, nothing. But the moment the contact comes, it stirs. Then when it stirs, if something that you are not familiar with, there is fear. That's how you react to it. Or something that is like very loud, also sometimes it disturbs you. Understand not? Or if there is nothing to distract you, then the tactile consciousness will come. You feel your pain. Your lack of ability to relax,
or your numbness or itchiness, then sometimes your mind become sleepy, slough off. Yeah? Then you like want to doze off. These are all hindrances. So the key to meditation is to recognize the hindrance, and they are your teacher. When the hindrance are there, you know why you are not peaceful. Because they hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of peace and calm. So when you understand that they are there, means you have to silence your mind and train your mind to relax and just aware. When you are just aware without reacting, sensual desire, you will cease to be. The first two hindrances must go. Then there is opportunity to become more peaceful and more calm. When you can let things be, when you don't get angry, unhappy over whatever mind state, when you don't label any of this phenomena as pain, numbness or what, then you are at peace. Understand? Or? Then the hindrance of mind are not there to disturb you. That's why you just silence your mind and just aware. No need to do anything. But the initial training is difficult because you are most of the time heedless. Throughout the day you think a lot. You're hardly mindful. And your senses are so active in life. That's why in the midst of life you cannot cope with life. You're hardly aware throughout the day. That's why daily mindfulness cannot be developed. If you can't do it in a formal meditation, how can you do it in the midst of life when all your senses are active? Here, most of your senses are down. And yet you cannot do. Means this mind is conditioned into thinking, conditioned into arising the heedlessness, the hindrance of mind. So this is the first realization. Then you determine to train yourself to develop the spiritual faculty to reverse all this. That's why you must develop the sadha, the virya. When these two are there, you become more calm, more peaceful and more composed. Then when you meditate, the mind easy to settle down. Then when you have developed the sati through your bowing, then the mind relax very fast. Otherwise you need to train, and it's very difficult to train. And most people train it wrongly, because they use method and technique wrongly. They follow instruction without understanding what sati is. They use the thought to be aware, to note, to do the meditation. Then the meditator is the thought which is active. That's why it cannot become quiet. It cannot become silent. It cannot become peaceful. So this is the reason. So you need to slowly develop your own understanding through your own investigation. That's why the purpose of you coming here to train your mind is to understand that, so that you know what you are doing, why your mind is like that. Everyone is different. Everyone need to train. But if you have do your puja correctly, the devotional practice correctly, and you understood what the Buddha has taught you, then very easy to develop. When your sadha virya is there, sati come automatically. But you need to train. Bowing is a very good starting point. Yes.
The mind, we are trying to train the mind.
Yes.
So the mind wanders, that's why we use the mind to bring it back to control.
You don't use the mind to bring it back. You don't mind, I just correct you a little bit. I say you accept the reality of the untrained mind. The untrained mind has this tendency to think, wander off, because it's heedless for so long. So what you should do is accept that reality. Don't fight. Don't become unhappy. Just smile, because I have yet to train this mind. It has this tendency, very normal. When I understand, I don't react. I am at peace. I can smile. Then I just need to do what I have to do. Be aware of the breathing again. I come back. Understand? Maintain awareness at the breathing. If it run again, I come back. Understand? Every time you aware at the place you want to be, that is the training. You don't bring it back. The bringing it back is a thought. The thought try to be there, then you never be there. You just silence your mind, like you feel your forehead. How you feel? You just don't think it. You just feel it. Like you feel something, like your hand, you feel hot and cold. You just feel, don't think, feel. You feel your breath. Understand? Don't think of the in and out breath. If you think, then the thought come out. You don't try to be mindful of the in and out breath. You're just aware. That's why the Buddha say, breathing in, you are aware. He never say, breathing in, you know. Understand? No thought involved, just aware. Breathing out, aware. Means the mind and the breath move as one. That's it.
So while doing the meditation, like now we hear the noise outside?
All this will come and interfere because your senses are open. So when it comes, how does the mind behave? Does it follow this consciousness?
Not
only whether it doesn't or it does, because you must understand what happened to the mind. Whichever that has the most strong impact, means the consciousness that affect you strongest, your mind will tend to go there, understand not? Because the contact there is very strong. The sense data is very strong. So that consciousness override the rest. It's like somebody shout very loudly. You suddenly turn, understand not? Because that consciousness take over. So you know your mind. It will just move accordingly. But when you have awareness, you don't have to. You can decide what you want to do. You can just decide. If I want to stay with my heart, I stay with my heart. If I want to be aware of something, I can be aware of something. Normally, it's the consciousness arise first. Then it doesn't stir. It hear thing as it is, see thing as it is. Everything is just the way it is. And then you come back. That's why nothing will happen. Then you just let things be. As long as you don't interfere with life, everything will return to normal. Normality, peace, stillness, sati, mindfulness within. Okay? You have to train. Not easy. When I describe, it's like very easy. But you have to do it. It takes you a while to understand all this. But you don't worry. Have patience. Things will unfold. It is best to do the bowing. It helps so much, I tell you. Then after that, very easy to sit, I tell you. Then when you walk, you are very mindful. When you move, you are very mindful. Then when you bend and stretch, you are very mindful. Because when you can be mindful of bowing, means bending, stretching, turning, you are all already mindful. Then you think less. And that is the state of mind that can meditate. When you are most of the time mindful without thinking, that training actually develop new conditioning. Understand? It conditions you to be mindful more and more, more and more, more and more. And when that become continuous, sitting is automatic, very easy. The mind doesn't run anymore. Okay, I have to go. Very sorry. We do the usual sharing of merits. Then after that, we disperse and. Okay, sharing of merits with the devas. Akasata cha bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anamoditwa chirang rakantu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits and may they long the dispensation, long protect the dispensation. Itta vata ca amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired and may all devas rejoice. May it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transform merits to departed one. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Let this merit accrue to our departed relatives, and may they all to be well and happy. Okay, we will chant the blessings. Devo vasatu kalena sasa sampati hitocha Vito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be rich harvest. May the world prosper. And may the government and ruler of the days be righteous. Okay, the last one is your aspiration. Imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patia. By the grace of this merit that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect to all the worthy ones, including the Buddha, Kuan Yin and all.